Podtacular number 230, this Spartan Life interview for July 9th, 2010.
Everyone, welcome to a very special episode of Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
I'm your host, Brent Gamer. And join with us today is Chris Burt from The Spartan Life. Say hi, Chris.
Oh, hi.
Or Lacedaemon, as everyone else knows him.
did not see you there.
What's up, guys?
Not much. How's it over in Talkland show?
Talk show land.
Yeah. Sorry, I got my words mixed up there.
I don't like admitting to existing in the real world, but just for the sake of this podcast, I guess I can say that I'm actually in Brooklyn, New York. But yeah, my real life is inside Halo, of course, you know.
Right.
Talking it up, chatting it up. Talk is cheap. Life is cheaper.
Yeah. Money talks, bullshit walks. But you can't touch my 3-lock box.
I have no idea where that comes from.
I think that comes from Sammy Hagar, Dustin.
But you would know.
Yeah, actually, Sammy Hagar was referenced in the Divine Comedy. So,
like Dante, huh?
Yeah.
Awesome! Wow.
Dante was based on Sammy Hagar.
I didn't know that. Yeah, Sammy went back that far.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible when you think about it.
It is. You mean you look back? Satan was actually Sammy Davis Jr.
back then Sammy's real name was Sammy Hagar the Horrible, I believe.
Yeah, Satan Davis Jr.
Satan Davis Jr.
He changed his first name when he came over into America.
Who can make a fire burn? You don't like my singing? Huh?
I
love your singing. I was waiting for more. That's why
I don't know what to add on to it. So,
who can take a human, dip him in a inferno,
abandon all hope, ye who enter?
Satan man can.
Which of the seven deadly sins applies to you? It's probably lust and avarice.
What, only two?
Yeah. Damn.
You're not living life here, Brent. I'm shocked.
I think I've dwelled into blah, 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 blah.
That's dwelled is, you know, when you're dwelling and you're delving. It's not easy if you try to do both at the same time. But you know, if you can, that's what it's called.
It's an LSD experience. It's a bad trip.
I knew that. I'm glad your audience is getting such valuable information here. It's important.
Oh, yes.
I know. This is what the audience has come to expect from the quality production here at Podtacular.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I've known about Podtacular for a good long time, and it's an excellent show. And you guys picked up the what's the word I'm looking for? You picked
the slack.
You picked up the slack, you picked up the mantle, and you ran with it. That I'm mixing metaphors really badly there, but you know what I'm trying to say.
We ran the gauntlet.
You ran the gauntlet with a mantle.
And walking the talk.
Pretty well right now.
Yeah, now the Fumo is no longer with the show, which has been how long about?
It's been about 2 years.
Yeah, see, I can't help but interview people. I'm just going to interview you guys. That's okay, right?
Hey, we'll go for it. We're actually trying to get Fumo on with you guys, but he kind of struggles with live here and there.
He struggles with life too.
Well, that was really the problem, is that he got too involved in real life and he abandoned his digital life.
What was he thinking is what I want to know, really.
Like nowadays, instead of playing video games, he runs marathons.
What does he see that we don't see?
running? Really? Really, Fumo? Really? Running? What, like, you know, look, maybe he doesn't know that reach will enable you to run, you know, when you, you know, when, when Reach comes out, he'll be able to run. Maybe that's the problem. He couldn't run enough, run fast enough, like sprint. Yeah. Right? What is it called in Reach? It's called sprinting, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is. Yeah. So maybe that was the problem. Maybe when Reach comes out, he will be able to give up, finally give up this waste of time that he calls a real life and get back on the show.
We need to light a fire under his and get him back on the show.
Yeah.
I just remember at just bringing me back memories from the ending to that show.
Which one?
The one that you guys were actually on. I guess it was, what, 4 years ago that you guys
Jesus. Were? Yeah, I have so little memory about that. So what happened at the end?
He asked you, I don't remember what exactly the question was, but it was along the lines of, what should people do if they're going to do like machinima and stuff like this?
Mm-hmm.
And you said, make sure you have a real job. Something along those lines.
Ah, yes. And here we are 4 years later, and I still don't have a real job. No, I do actually have a real job. Shall I tell you about my real job? Is that something that your audience would find interesting, or do you think they would just
shut? I'm sure they would.
They might
shut. I don't think our audience have jobs, actually. So,
they can live vicariously through me, then. That's good.
Yes.
I want to give them some employment tips.
Yeah. I guess the easiest way to describe it is I'm an audio producer. So I create sound design and I write music and I record voices and edit them for various productions, including CD-ROMs, DVDs, the internet, film and TV occasionally, radio. Most of the time it's for educational purposes. So some of my clients are like Scholastic and people like that. They, you know, so I'm recording a whole lot of people talking and then editing it.
Huh.
So you'd think I'd be really sick of hearing people talk at this point.
Yeah.
But it pays the bills. Sound design, which is more interesting, and then music, which is very interesting, but it's kind of hard to make music pay because it's so subjective and they always want changes, and you know, but it's fun. I really like it.
So do you get asked to do a certain kind of music for something, or how?
Yeah, I mean, I guess once you get like a reel going, you kind of, you know, people know you're real, and then they hire you if they think it fits what they're doing. So I just, at the moment, I'm working with another musician composer who I hired on to help me with the music for a new Wii game for Scholastic.
Oh wow!
Making a Wii game, so we're writing kind of like haunted house music type stuff.
Big boys,
right? It's all pretty much the same. When you're writing music, it's just music, and you know, I mean, unless you're writing like, you know, if you're talking like old school internet or CD-ROMs where it was MIDI files. Then you call the fat man. Do you guys know about the fat man?
Fat with money, I'm guessing.
No, he's just like the fat man. His company was called Team Fat, and he was a composer for video games in the early days of CD-ROM. So he did a lot of MIDI scores, which are really cool because they're, you know, there's only so much you can do with MIDI on a CD-ROM, you know.
Right.
But he managed to make it interesting.
Huh.
So he's, one of my inspirations, I guess you could say. That keeps me pretty busy. But, you know, moving right into what's happening with me currently, I've been doing this Spartan Life over the years, of course, as you know, and it's always been difficult to kind of fit it into my other work. And you know, it's been really cool because we've kept like our own take on it. We've never really completely embraced, game culture as a whole. We kind of always were a little bit on the periphery of it, and we had guests on our show that had nothing to do with games. And I really liked that, actually. I thought that was really fun. And it was, you know, it brought a whole – the nice thing about it for the games industry and for hopefully for Bungie and Microsoft was that we brought a lot of people into proximity of Halo that never would have looked at it probably. Or if they had looked at it, they wouldn't have understood it. And it kind of gave them a way into the game, I think. And, you know, we're kind of happy with the way that worked out. But, you know, we hit a point where we weren't able to continue the project for a while because of work. Got really busy. And then Halo Waypoint or 343 Industries contacted me a few months ago and asked me if I would start producing a series for them for Halo Waypoint, available only on Xbox Live, which I was very glad to take on. And that contact actually came through one of the nicest guys I know, Bernie Burns from Rooster Teeth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a really exceptional guy. And, you know, we thank him whenever we get a chance. Yeah, he kind of made the original contact with us, between us and Waypoint. And, you know, so since then we've been like doing these one-off episodes, but, you know, we've gotten a bunch of episodes in the can now, and we're basically gearing up. And so we're on your show to announce our new series with Waypoint.
Very cool. So we actually had Bernie Burns on 2 months ago too, and that was, he went through a lot sitting with us for 4 hours.
Oh man.
Yeah, yeah. We
please tell me it's not going to be like that tonight.
No, it shouldn't be. Because we actually had submissions and questions.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Everybody wanted to talk to Bernie. That's great.
Right.
Man.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we had a good time, but he definitely voiced his frustration about being at 4 hours when he brought up on the drunk tank. But
yeah.
I mean, it was still a good show, and we definitely would like to have him back on again. And he said that next time he'd probably recommend Gus.
Yeah, like that. Somebody wants to. Yeah, exactly.
Gus would be a really interesting choice, though, because at least from what I've gathered in videos and podcasts, he's probably one of the least patient,
right,
of the group.
Right. Yeah. Those guys don't hesitate to call it like they see it, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have an episode coming online on Halo Waypoint tomorrow, as a matter of fact, and I think we're considering that the. We've had a couple of one-offs here. We had Jacob and Jeremy from Ascended Justice, who are now working with Waypoint. They were our first guests on the Waypoint series, right. Or the kind of the one-off. We had a couple of one-offs, that one, and then we also had Louis Wu on.
Yeah, that one was good.
From HBO. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun. He's
especially
also
with the racetrack.
Yeah. We've always had like a crew of assistants from our forum members, and over the years we've managed to become very close with a handful of these guys. I'm looking at their names on AIM right now. Amongst them are Clone Trooper Kev, Downskated, Chromium, Oni Kudu, and TSL Stealth. Stealth is one of the main guys on our forum. He's one of the main admins on our forum. So Downskated has taken it upon himself to find the best maps for us to use in these interviews. And he did really well in the Louis Wu interview, I think, with the racetrack. Uh-huh. And then what he called Crypt of Damien, which was, I guess the Crypt of Doom, map. I don't recall the map. Our authors' names right now, but if you actually, yeah, Crypt of Doom was Many Popes. I remember that. And the guys who made the racetrack map, I think it was called Saturn, and I think I don't remember the guys' names, but they're from Halo Tracks, and they're really talented map makers.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and they're the credits, actually, if you look at the credits from that episode, it's got the gamer tags for each of the authors of the maps, if you wanted to contact them and tell them how amazing their maps are.
Right.
So Downskate is picking some good maps for us. But after Louis Wu, we decided to start off on an actual series. So we're doing like a mini series with Waypoint, and I'm here basically to announce our first guests, which are coming. The video is coming online tomorrow on Waypoint, and the big surprise, the big excitement for us is that the guest is OK Go, the rock band OK Go. Who a lot of people will know from their incredible music videos that are like amongst the most viral things on the internet.
Right.
So have you guys seen the, This Too Shall Pass Rube Goldberg Machine, video that they did?
I have.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
That was nuts. And I watched the they did had a commentary video with it.
Mm-hmm.
I watched that one too.
Cool.
I think they said it took 6 days to do all the takes and finally get a good one.
Yeah,
they finally nailed it at the end.
Yeah, I think it was months in the making that the actual machine was months in the making.
Right.
Yeah, and then
the recording was like 6 days or a week or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, 6 days, right? And yeah, it's just astounding that it all works, and you know, it's pretty beautiful the way it's designed. The band had a lot of the ideas. I'm trying to remember the name of the company that did it. It's that did it with them. It's a San Francisco company. I'm sorry, LA company. Yeah. Anyway, but they, it's just an amazing piece. The way it works, it was kind of like they really outdid themselves. Their videos before that were pretty impressive. The treadmill video.
The treadmill one is the famous one. Yeah.
Marching band, all that stuff, and this one, there's a brand new one actually up there now. It went up a week and a half ago, I think. It's a time lapse video. So I think they shot it over the course of, I think the band is in it for a couple of days. Like you can see like the sun going up, sun going down kind of thing behind them while they're singing. It's pretty incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. The technique is gonna, I'm sure there's probably already discussions online about how they did it. And the last shot is just unbelievable. It just like fast motions, time lapse through what looks like a several weeks. You know, of this one shot. It all takes place in this park. I guess it's in LA. I think it's in LA. And it's really amazing. You should YouTube new look for or you know on the internet just look for OK Go new video or something or time lapse video or something like that. I'm sure you'll find it.
I hadn't heard about this.
Yeah, I can tell you the name of it actually while we're talking if you want. But yeah, so they ended up being. It just was really fortuitous because a good friend of mine, Mike Rosenthal, who runs a space here, an arts venue here in New York called The Tank, happens to be college friends with Damien from OK Go. Lead singer's name is Damien also.
Wow.
And he's basically, you know, he plays a role with the band. He's a consultant. He's a sometime part-time sort of manager sort of thing. And he has a lot of ideas for them about how, you know, like the USB sticks that they give away at their concerts was Mike's idea. So he said, hey, you're doing shows now pretty regularly. You want to interview OK Go? And I said, hell yeah, man, that would be great. These guys are pretty amazing. And so he put it together and they turned out to just be really cool guys. They're very smart, you know. They're not like your average. I guess rock bands nowadays are pretty well educated. I don't know, but these guys they're very engaged in life and in the internet, especially.
Yeah. So,
in internet policy for the government, net neutrality, that kind of stuff. Mm. Damien went down. I think several of them went down to Washington, maybe Tim as well, and spoke to the FCC chairman about net neutrality. Testified in front of Congress about net neutrality.
I think I heard something about that.
Yeah. So they're fighting.
Weren't they also on the Colbert Report like a month ago?
Yeah, yeah. And Colbert Report did a nice little – they made their own Rube Goldberg machine. They kind of beat us to it. We had done ours before them, but our episode didn't get online until after. But
aww.
Yeah. But so they were really great guests. So we have the OK Go video is coming online tomorrow, the 10th of July. And then coming up after that, we've got a handful of other really interesting artists and writers and musicians. And a couple of the names that I can mention to you are, I think for up right after OK Go will be Apache Enforcer, who is known to Halo fans as the last man in Halo 2. So we interviewed him, and that was a lot of fun. We had again Downskated pick some really amazing maps. In fact, I think he made a couple of maps with a friend of his that we used. And then we've also got on the line Anna Monoguchi, who are, I don't know if you guys have heard of them, but they're pretty exceptional chip music or 8-bit music band who were really kind of breaking out. And they've been playing at PAX every year to sold out crowds. And they are at the moment working on the Scott Pilgrim video game music. And then after them, or sometime after them, another really exciting announcement for us is Todd McFarlane of Spawn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's going to be exciting. They just committed recently and they're really into the idea. And that may not be until August.
Okay.
So we're hoping on something approaching 2 episodes per month for the next, 3, 4, 5 months, whatever. And then we'll see about making some more.
Wow, that's a lot of production time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. This way we can kind of, we can get into it and do a good job and,
Yeah. So for those of the listeners that really don't know what the Spartan Life is, give us a little rundown of what kind of format your show is compared to a lot of other like Halo podcast shows, stuff like that.
Right. Well, I mean, it's a machinima. So we're actually in Halo, visibly. It's a video series. So what we do is we invite people into a game on Xbox Live, a game of Halo 3 on Xbox Live. We talk to them. We usually connect via Skype as well, just to get good audio from them. But we talk to them in the game. We walk around in the game. We experience things in the game with them, and we treat the game as a sort of social space to some degree. Although there is an awful lot of gaming going on, usually we typically invite a handful of gamers from our forum into the game as well. You guys are invited, open invitation anytime you want to join us. I'll try to let you know when we have a shoot coming up.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah. I know I would. I don't know about Brent.
Yeah.
I think I'd like to get on the craziness.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's cool. We have a lot of fun. And, it's pretty unpredictable. Halo is a very bizarre kind of volatile world, as you know, with lots of explosives. So something usually goes wrong, but it's always fun. And so then we just, basically we take that and we edit it down into a video. And we have a number of them on our site, thisspartanlife.com. That's our series that we've had up since, 2005. And now we're doing a new series for Halo Waypoint, which is available only on Xbox Live. If your listeners don't have Halo Waypoint and they're Halo fans, they definitely should go out there and check it out. It's really cool. There's lots of really good videos, lots of stuff by Rooster Teeth that you can't get on their site as well.
Right.
There are a lot of special video clips, vid docs or vi docs, however you say that, of the making of Reach, the making of, before that, the making of Halo 3. So they put a lot of that stuff online and they really use that as the Halo, all Halo channel on Xbox Live to keep in touch with their gamer base, their user base, their fans.
Yeah. Cool. So you've done 6 episodes and now you're doing your mini series for Halo Waypoint.
Right. Right. Yeah. The formats are different. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Right. No, go ahead.
Well, the format's a little bit different now. The series on our site are up until episode 6, they were half-hour shows approximately. Sometimes they were 27 minutes, sometimes they were 38 minutes, whatever. But centering around about a half an hour of – and we separated them into what we call modules, which were typically 5 or 6 different segments of the show, which we would do one at a time and put on – that way we didn't have to wait until the entire show was done to put it online. We could put it online in pieces.
Right.
And kind of, string people along like a little breadcrumb trail,
Yeah.
But at episode 6, we decided to do shorter form episodes that would just be one guest, a little wraparound and some other action happening in Halo with the characters that that's the other thing is that the cast of The Spartan Life are actually characters in the show. It's not just me, the host, and Fiber Optic, the bodyguard or tech consultant.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also basically characters in the show. We have scripted bits for everybody, and we have the Solid Gold Elite dancers who come in and
yeah.
dance.
Yeah, I'm going to ask about that later.
And we've got Octobit spinning chip music. So there, nowadays I think the episodes for Halo Waypoint have averaged around 5-6 minutes probably. So we're doing shorter episodes for them that are a bit more digestible online and easier to download.
Right. So this is more of a fanboy question, I guess. For season 5, I think it was episode 5.
Mm-hmm.
The long delay on that. Incredibly long delay on that.
Yeah.
How long was it there for? I want
to
say.
I try to forget. Yeah, it wasn't, I don't think it was a year, but it was a year after episode 6, I think, or after episode 5. We put episode 6 online a little bit less than a year later. It was actually done well before that, but we never finished episode 5, actually. Technically, we never finished episode 5.
Yeah, I thought you released episode 6 first, and then like a year later, you released episode 5.
No, episode 5 was in the works, and it was all but one module were uploaded.
Right.
And we had episode 6 done. We actually made episode 6 for an event in Melbourne, Australia, when we went down to the festival down there with ACME, which is the Australian Center for the Moving Image. We made a special episode just for them to screen right there. And I was the idea was I'd get back, finish episode 5, then put episode 6 online right away. Well, episode 5, the last segment of episode 5 was really, really difficult, and we never finished it. We never were able to finish it. I basically just set my sights too high and tried to do something that was really, really hard. And it was a very complicated, a rap. It was, you know, MC Aero's freestyle battle royal. And the idea was it was going to be several rappers freestyling over top of a Glomag track. And it was going to all work into the plot. And it was going to be MC Aero, this happens to him, that happens to him. So that will be divulged eventually. I think that it's going to be something more like an epilogue now without the rap. But when it comes out, it'll explain some things, some changes that have happened in this Spartan life to the faithful people who actually follow the story, you know, all three of them who follow the story. Because I don't know if you've noticed, but the last couple episodes, MC Aero has had a Jamaican accent. So now when you listen to the
Yeah,
the opening of the Spartan life, he says, you know, coming to you from the multi. I can't do Jamaican accent, but it's totally Jamaican.
I don't know. For some reason, I thought that came from, I want to say, episode 2 or 3. No, it almost seems like from the beginning, but I guess it.
Well, you know, you might be able to. I mean, Aero is, you know. Brian is actually the guy who plays Aero is actually, has some Jamaican blood. So he's lived, many of his family members have Jamaican accents. So
right.
He actually, you know, it came totally naturally to him. So you might have detected that, you know, earlier without him actually doing it.
Okay.
But we just were having fun one day with this rap, and he said, what if, you know, what if this other guy has a Jamaican accent? And I said, okay, cool, let's try that. And we really liked it. So we kind of wrote a little bit of business in the show around that, and it was going to be in this episode 5 epilogue, which was never made. So he now has a Jamaican accent, but it's never been explained why. and it will be explained why eventually, hopefully soon. You'll see. There is a very good reason, and I think what'll happen is once it becomes apparent what the reason is, that will like trigger, you know, a kind of a new plot thread in the show, so to speak. It's funny how real life, you know, and virtual life really intermingle with this Spartan life. We really, our inability to keep the show going consistently and get episodes up at a timely rate, you know, has actually changed the story of the actual show the show.
So is there like an actual story behind the interviews, or? I know you have the modules that kind of tell a story on its own, but then you have the interviews that are kind of separated.
Yeah, we try to kind of keep it. You know, the story basically is just Damien is a talk show host. Fiber and Arrow are there to basically keep the show running, and and you know the dancers are there for entertainment purposes and Octobit. And there's you know other ancillary characters who come in and out. Yeah, it never really goes all that much deeper than that. I think the deepest we went with story was when we did the Bungie bonus disc. Episode, which was Foobarring Space Time. That was the title of it. And the idea was this whole data jacking story thread that we had been following since we had Louis Wu on the show the first time. And that was actually something that happened to us. It's weird. This whole, you probably don't remember this, but we had this story thread several episodes back where, you know, we had this idea about data jacking where if you press the right amount number of buttons at the same time and melee the wall at a certain point where the geometries intersected, you could actually burst through into another map. You know, you'd actually go somewhere else in the metaverse, let's say. The reason we thought of that, again, it came from real life. We were playing Halo one day and something happened in the game. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but it was the craziest glitch I've ever seen. I'm gonna go out on a limb and kind of guess that it had to do with data packets that got scrambled. You know how the information comes to your Xbox over, you know, the wire via these packets of data, and they're broken up into packets, you know, for delivery. And then when they get back into your console, they get reassembled into what's happening in the game. And it's basically a stream of data that keeps coming in.
Right, like and, data and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Positioning, you know, all that stuff. Game data. It's all the stuff that gets saved when you have a saved game and you look at it in theater mode.
Mm-hmm.
So on Xbox Live, you know, of course, there's interruptions in the service occasionally. There's, you know, there's dropouts. There's, you know, lag. And sometimes that is enough to cause this kind of what I would consider to be something like scrambled data packets. And one time I saw this effect happen from that, and I've never seen it since. But while we were playing, at some point in the game, every second or so, your point of view switched to a different player. So you're running around in the game, and it's me. I'm seeing my point of view. You see the gun in front of you, you know. And then like a second later, I'm seeing – it's almost like, you know, when you're in save game, you can hit the up button on the D-pad to switch points of view. It's literally that effect. It was just constantly switching every second.
That's weird.
But the wacky thing about it is that it wouldn't change – I don't know how it did this, but it wouldn't – like if you looked up, when it switched to the other player's view, you'd still be looking up, you know. Or if you looked down at the ground – you just see the ground changing underneath you.
So were you just teleporting positions between players or?
Something like that. You know, I am completely at a loss to explain how it happened. So I came up with my own sci-fi version of how and why it happened, which is data jacking. And so the idea was that we experienced that and then we backward, you know, in the story of the show, the fiction, we backwards engineer that effect to figure out how it happened and to control it. And we figure out a way to control it by hitting, you know, I think it was something like squat, press A. I don't know. It was some button combination and you had to melee the wall at just right between geometries, the seam between geometries, which all this is based on actual glitches. You know, I mean, there, like super jumping and all that stuff was based on, you know, the separations between geometries and the maps. And so there was a basis in truth, but we kind of took it off to a whole sci-fi thing where we're jumping around the metaverse by doing this. And there's a crisis at certain point. Mr. Poopy Doodoo, who has recently been transformed into an all-seeing god in the eye of hate.
I was going to ask about that. I'm actually going through all the past episodes. I was trying to find out who that was, and you just brought it up. So, yeah, that's what I was thinking when you brought that up.
Yeah, he gets the ultimate gamer unlock by jacking. I think he jacks a banshee, and then he jumps out of a banshee, jacks another one in midair, throws a sticky grenade at someone on the ground and hits him right in the head with it all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually We actually did this in the game. It wasn't easy, I got to tell you. That took many, many takes. I still have the outtakes, which I have to release one day. But so he gets the ultimate gamer unlock and becomes the face.
Omnipotent,
in Halo.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is actually, you know, is actually Chris Carney from Bungie, we found out. Who I really? Met when we were at Bungie, and I had to get his okay for this whole story thread, and he was like, "Yeah, sure, whatever. It sounds cool. Go ahead."
Wow. So it was actually a Bungie guy.
Yeah, it's Chris Carney. He's one of the artists at Bungie. I think environment artist at Bungie, or at least he was then. He may now be like running the entire show for all I know. But he's an awesome guy and with a great sense of humor. So. Huh. Yeah, so I guess the idea of the episode that we did at Bungie was that Mr. Poopy Doodoo, who's now this all-seeing face in the Halo, finds out that the cast and crew of this Spartan Life have been foobarring the space-time continuum by data-jacking all over the place. And we're like causing rifts in the space-time continuum and everything's getting messed up and Damien gets frozen in time and we end up in Halo 3, basically. We find a rift into what we call the new world, which is Halo 3.
And then you found your new stage.
Then we found our new stage. That's right. Yeah, so... Yeah, it's funny. Like, there are only a handful of people who know the ins and outs of that storyline because it's so incredibly
intricate,
intricate and complicated, and probably not very well advised to have made it that complicated. But it was fun while we were doing it.
Cool.
You know, and one day when we're 60, 70 years old, you know, we're like, "Do you remember when we were in there?" I can't remember anymore. Never mind. I don't know.
You along with Keith.
Yeah, right. The old codgers.
Yeah, I remember watching that episode and you guys bringing that up.
Right.
Another little segment that we haven't really talked about at all is body count.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about those? And are you going to do one of those again? Because I thought those were actually kind of funny.
Yeah, cool. I really like that too. That was one of the things that I felt like really set this show apart. You know, the fact that we have dancers, awesome, but body count, you know, it's basically the idea for anybody on your listeners who are not familiar, you can go to thespartanlife.com and hit up, I think like every other episode we had a body count segment. The idea was basically that it was something like a political debate within Halo, with the fighting intact. So, we like to say, you know, crossfire with the safety off or something. We had a number of variations on that, you know, the TV show Crossfire, but with actual Crossfire, you know, so, yeah, I think my friend, the writer, Mark Derry said, Crossfire with the safety off. Those are scripted segments. The original idea was to actually get two people in there and really have them battle it out and argue at the same time. But it was hard enough just to get two people to argue, much less play Halo at the same time. So what we decided to do was a kind of a South Park approach where we basically would pick real people and then just kind of parody them. So my favorite one was, you know, Tom from MySpace and Ann Coulter.
Yes, the net neutrality. Yeah.
Yeah.
That one was the one I remember most.
Yeah, I think that was the most successful one. I really would like to make some more of those. I think those were really, really fun. And we could update the net neutrality one at this point, I think. You know, we could get somebody from Comcast as one of the combatants. And maybe Damian Kulash from OK Go is the other combatant. He'd totally probably take that on. It'd be fun. But those I think that would be a whole Waypoint episode. So we haven't done any of those for Waypoint. We are looking into. We've had the Saul Goldilie dancers in one of the Waypoint episodes so far. I think there's one coming up with them in it as well. And so we're going to continue that. What we'll do is we'll make body count episodes for our main site. So yeah. our plan is to get back to production on the site as well, besides the Waypoint episodes. We're just trying to get up to speed with the Waypoint stuff first.
Cool. Are there any other kind of like show ideas that you've been bouncing around that might make an appearance?
Well, we have this backlog of of just like, you know, backstory ideas, like, you know, the whole narrative that takes place between Fiber and Damien. I think we started something in episode 6 that I really would like to continue, which was basically the show started to become about Damien being the host, MC Arrow being the kind of, you know, stage manager guy who kind of lines up the guest and gets gets things ready, and Fiber being basically the guy who is
security guard,
the security guy who has to go and like clear the stage of, you know, itinerant, you know, grunts and brutes and whatever is lurking there, gamers. So, you know, with Halo 3, now that we can shoot in campaign mode, well, it's been some time since Halo 3's
right
existed, but of course now we can shoot in campaign mode. We've done some segments in campaign mode. We've actually done a number of live segments in campaign mode, which was really fun. So that's something we want to get back to, returning to that story thread where Fiber is the, you know, he's the unwilling security guy who has to go and clear the interview zone so that it's safe for Damien and Arrow to waltz in unscathed and do the easy work.
Right. I mean, it's kind of hard to do that too. I guess if you're doing it campaign, if you do it campaign, the multiplayer.
Yeah, it's so much fun, I got to tell you. Yeah, the restrictions, obviously, it's 4 players only.
Right.
And you have to look a certain way. But what we're doing is basically, we have this explanation that, you know, we're going to campaign, so we have to actually switch armor to the more sturdier armor that's going to actually protect us from the brutes. And, you know, so we.
Yeah.
So the idea is that the Fiber Optic puts on this green armor, goes into out to clear the interview zone, but when he gets there, they all think he's Master Chief because he's got Master Chief's armor on.
Yeah.
So they all want to kill him because he's Master Chief, you know. So they start chasing him down, and so that hasn't been happening in the Waypoint episodes yet. But
right.
I do want to cut away to that at some point because I just think that was a really fun story thread that we're looking in, really, really making Fiber the hapless security guy, which is kind of fun.
Brent, do you have anything to say? You're kind of quiet over there.
Oh, no, I'm just listening to you guys, interview it up. Doing a good job, Dustin.
Do it up.
Keep it up.
I have probably a dozen more questions. I probably won't get to them all. But one thing that is really, I think, unique to your show is you let other guests in there and actually fighting in the background. So how does that exactly work?
Well, yeah, that's been something that's been really – that's changed over the years. When we first – I remember the first time that happened, John Keith, who is my actually co-creator of the show in a lot of ways, he was there when I came up with the idea for the show, and he helped me really design he helped me write the first script, basically, the first two scripts. And he also helped me come up with the ideas. He shot in the – Halo 2 version of the Spartan Life, the fly-in, he shot that himself before I even knew what was going on. He was already shooting the opening to the show, and he helped me kind of come up with the ideas. But I remember one day we were like, you know, scouting locations for the first episode, and we were just in Halo 2 running around in Headlong, like, what are we going to do the stage up here? What do we do this? And, you know, what are we going to use for, like, we want a DJ booth. Is there anything around here? And while we're talking about all this stuff, you know, we left the party open and people start jumping in, you know, and as they're jumping in, you know, we're trying to do this and they're killing us. And we're talking, wait, no, we're working on something here, guys. You know, just don't kill us. Come on, chill out. And like, you know, they were like, shut up, throwing grenades at us, whatever. Yeah. They're just being rude gamers. Like, as you know, it's just the way it is sometimes when you jump into a game, it's just, you're having fun. So, but it gave us this idea, like, wow, you know, what if this happened in every show? It'd be kind of fun. So we started just leaving the party open and letting people jump in. And we found out really quickly that it was impossible to actually shoot a show that way.
Yeah.
Because we would be dead every 10 seconds, you know, we wouldn't be playing the game. We'd be talking and, you know, nodding our heads like we're talking and looking at each other and walking around, and people would be scoping us out with the sniper and taking us out every 10 seconds. So what happened was we started letting that happen, and it became impossible to, you know, to shoot the show because we were just dying every 10 seconds. So little by little, we started, as the forum started filling up with members, we started talking to them about it and saying, and people were like, can I be in a combine? So we just start letting people in, but we would give them a primer. We say, okay, you can do this, you can't do that.
Right.
You know, we want it to be unpredictable. We want it to be crazy and explosive, but we don't want to die every 10 seconds. So, you know, try to keep the grenades out of the area where we're talking to the guests. And, you know, for the most part, they behaved themselves. Occasionally, you know, we would get a stray grenade in the middle of a shot. And, you know, we usually kept it in because it was funny. And I think what happened was they would see that it got left into the edit when it went online. And so the next time we would shoot, somebody else would throw a grenade. It's like, hey, I want my grenade to be in the show. So, it became kind of hard again, but I think we ended up a really good system where, for a while, Fiber was, the extras, the guy who's running the show with the extras, you know, we called them extras or online assistants, keeping them out of the area where we're doing the interview, making sure that their instructions get relayed to them. And then later, Killbug did a little of that. And I think a couple of times Clone Trooper, Downskated, Chromium, some of the other guys have done it on occasion as well. So recently Downskated has been helping us out a lot with that, just kind of keeping people, you know, sane. Like, you know, we want them to have fun and we want them to blow stuff up and go crazy, but we don't want to, you know, we don't want the guest to keep dying because it's hard for the guest to find me again after he or she dies.
Right.
Each time. So we've evolved a set of rules basically over the years that that work pretty well.
So what have you kind of learned most of going through all of this, making it's basically like a TV show is what it is. So what have you learned most about doing this kind of thing in Halo, and you're pretty much the only kind of machinima that's like this. So you're kind of out there.
Yeah, for a while there was trash talk by the Ill Clan, which is not done in an off the shelf game, but it was real, you know, full on machinima, and that was pretty cool. I don't know if you ever saw that. If you look at, I think it's just illclan.com, illclan.com. You can watch some of the old episodes of Trash Talk. It was a lot of fun. So they started a little bit later than us, but it's funny because when I came up with the idea, I asked them what they thought of it, and they said, well, first thing I got to say is, you know, full disclosure here, just want you to know we have an idea for a talk show, a machinima talk show in the works, and just want you to know that we're not copying you. We've had this idea for a little while, you know, and right. I know these guys play well. They're actually good friends. So I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty amazing. Cool. So they soon after we started our show, they started theirs. But I think, yeah, what we learned really is that Halo is a dangerous place. That's probably mostly what we learned, you know. I think we learned that for me, like, the thing that's been important throughout all this is to just kind of stay true to my original vision, which was to create something really a really unusual amalgamation of media. You know, a talk show that's live inside a game online, and also to not entirely, you know, not entirely make it all about gaming, make it about everything, make it about life, because then it makes it all the more weird that we're talking about these things in a game, you know, and it makes it all the more special that it is a game, and it makes it more apparent, I think, to the audience that the important thing here is that we're doing an old kind of show in a new kind of medium, and
right, it's like your Lyric King Live of Halo.
Yeah, or as Wired magazine said, a mashup of the Charlie Rose Show and Doom. yeah so that's been important to me, and that's something that, like, I figured out some of the things that I learned too late. I should have taken Bernie Burns' advice early on. I knew he was right when he told me this. I honestly didn't have any way to do anything I could do about it. But he said, you know, the important thing, Chris, is to make sure that you keep putting stuff online on a regular basis, because that's the way you get an audience. You generate an audience by predictability. They know that every Friday a new Red versus Blue episode would come online, you know, with the first season or the original seasons. And they would be there Friday night, you know, or whatever, you know, waiting for it, or Thursday night at midnight, I guess.
Crashing the servers.
Yeah. And they'd be waiting for it. And it would go on, and like, there would be, you know, all hell would break loose, and there would be like first comment and all that stuff. And it really generated a real, you know, a real hardcore fan base for them. And I think we just were never able to do that because of, you know, our revenue model was very different from theirs. You know, we weren't able to make money on the show for a long time. You know, we just intellectual property issues and all that stuff, which is totally, you know, something that we knew we would come up against. But, you know, eventually we were, you know, and Microsoft and Bungie, to their credit, you know, were very supportive. They said, you know, we love your show. Keep doing what you're doing. Marty O'Donnell was like our first contact with those guys. He was like, love what you're doing. Keep it up. It's awesome. When can I be on the show? You know?
Yeah.
I feel like that wasn't the problem. The problem was, you know, just, you know, the ability to quit your day job, do it full time, really, really dedicate yourself to it, so you can put something up either in every week or at least every 2 weeks. That was our original goal, was to do something one segment every 2 weeks, but it just proved to be too difficult. We had to get a lot of people together. When we were in Halo 2, it was very difficult to do because, you know, you had to everybody there at the same time. You couldn't record the voiceover and play the game and separate the two as well. And, you know, reshooting was an issue. Now with Halo 3, the whole interview was saved as a saved game, and I can go back and recam it any way I want by myself.
Right.
So all that whole, the visual production is simplified to such a degree that I can do it entirely by myself. And I only really need the crew to help me with the actual, you know, being there at the actual interview for blocking and all that stuff. So, you know, they don't have to be there for like take after take after take after take like they used to. So that was what made it originally very difficult for us to do, you know, we weren't doing a sitcom. We were doing something that was totally scripted, where you could write it out and really storyboard it ahead of time. We were doing a live interview show where you didn't know what was going to happen, and therefore it was unpredictable. It was very hard to produce because of that. So, you know, I think if we had been able to get stuff online really regularly, I mean, we had an amazing response early on. We had massive amounts. I mean, we had, gosh, I don't know, the first maybe year we had more than 1 million downloads of our videos.
Wow.
In the first week of our show launch, we were discussed on Attack of the Show on G4 TV, which promptly brought our server down. We were not able to serve movies anymore. I got hit up with a $2,000 bill from the ISP the next day. One night, I owed them $2,000 in fees from downloads. So I just didn't expect it to happen. You know, I just didn't expect it to go that viral. We got, as they say, used to say, we got slash dotted.
Yeah.
But it was, in this case, it was G4 TV. And then like several months after that, we got Boing Boinged, which again, that causes a massive hit. A handful of people at Boing Boing, you know, thought that it was a cool show and they wanted to write about it. And it just, you know, it just caused luckily by that time, Louis Wu from HBO had offered to host all of our videos for free. Yeah. So that saved our show. Absolutely. So we owe a lot to Louis Wu for that. We had a really good first couple of years. I think that if we had been able to keep up with the demand for episodes, we would have continued to have a, you know, record breaking years every year. But it didn't work out that way at the time. So we took a break rather than like keep everybody hanging on. We took a break for a while and came back recently. And lo and behold, there's Waypoint interested in doing some work with us. So we're real happy about this new relationship with them because they're pretty awesome.
That's cool. And I mean, you guys kind of fit right in with what Waypoint has to offer too, I think.
Yeah. It's a little bit different from their usual fare, but it fits in a nice way. It kind of, I think it complements a lot of the other stuff they've got online, which is really cool.
Yeah. So you've done a good job of kind of predicting my questions so far, but I'm going to ask this one anyways.
Sure.
So when you heard about the Halo 3 saved film feature, were you just kind of like, oh my gosh, this is going to make things so much easier, or I'm going to have more chance to do stuff now? What was kind of your first reaction to that, especially with this kind of stuff you do?
Yeah, it was pretty clear right away. I mean, we were introduced to it by going to Bungie in September. Well, no, it wasn't September. When was it? It was April. I believe it was the week of April 9th, April 10th of 2007. We were invited out to Bungie to create an episode for their bonus disc for Halo 3, which was coming out that September.
Right.
We worked with Jim McQuillan at Film Oasis, and of course, you know, Sketch Factor was there, Frankie was there. I didn't get to see Marty. He was out in the studio every day, so we didn't get to talk to him or hang out with him at all. But we talked to an awful lot of the people there, and the reason we had to go out there was because they couldn't let a build of the game out of the office, of course, because it would leak and, it would not only bring down the gaming industry, but I think the entire, you know, the entire Northern Hemisphere, the economies of the entire Northern Hemisphere would fail. It's like, you know, there would be World War III would break out, you know, famine, starvation. So we couldn't ask them for anything. And that was that was great for us, because that meant that they brought us all out there, and we worked directly with them in their offices, which was really, really cool, to meet them all. And, that was when we got there, they were like, okay, here's the lowdown. Saved film, you know, you can recam the whole damn thing. It saves it. You can move, you can change points of view at will. You can completely free roaming camera, which was totally new to Halo. All kinds of new stuff that was just like, and the new weapons and the new avatars and the new, you know, all this stuff. And it was just, you know, the higher resolution. And it was mind blowing. It was just so much to absorb in, you know, the 4 days that we were there.
Yeah.
And I remember, and we couldn't talk very loud because, you know, they were all working. We were literally right there in their space with them, working on this with them, like right there, you know. So,
wow.
And all these people were concentrating. I had to work really hard because they were on deadline. And here we are looking at all this shit and just thinking, I want to scream right now. I want to scream with glee about saved film and tell them how much I love them. And we were like, you know, Fiber was like, did you see that? Did you see what we're looking at? and Arrow is, you know, like trying to stifle his glee. So we're just,
wow.
We were kind of amazed at it. But I immediately saw the potential. And, you know, we interviewed Frankie for that episode actually. And the first thing I said was, you know, gee, thanks for this this Christmas present, early Christmas present to machinima makers all over the world. And he said, well, yeah, you know, it's nice that it's going to help the machinima guys. But honestly, we're doing this for the gamers because, you know, they used to say, you know, hey, remember that part of the map where I did this and I missed you by a second, but then my brute shot bounced off the wall of the canyon and came back and hit you in the head perfectly.
Right.
And it's a headshot. And the guy's like, yeah, right. Yeah, I really remember that. That didn't happen. Well, now you've got the saved game to prove
right.
it. So,
right.
So that was the real reason they made saved game and film and theater mode.
It makes montages so much easier too.
It makes what?
Montages.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, but they knew clearly when they were doing it that this would obviously open up enormous new possibilities for machinima. Halo is not the first game with save film or save game features. Obviously it's not the first game with a free roaming camera, but it is the first game of that generation with that kind of quality of graphics, and all of the other attributes that it has that made it really so perfect for machinima. you know, the extensive user base, the massive number of maps, the huge, you know, spaces in the game that you can use as sets, you know, all those things that made it so good for Machinima, is the first of those games to have those features, really. And that really just kind of set it up as really the off-the-shelf platform for Machinima filmmaking. And not only that, but I would go, I have gone so far in many times. I do a lot of traveling around and speaking to audiences about Machinima and the arts, at a number of art festivals, film festivals. I was at the Sydney Film Festival in Sydney, Australia. You know, and this past year we were in Amsterdam at the Picnic Festival. We did a live interview there on stage, in campaign mode, actually. There's a video of that online, as a matter of fact. I may release it one day, or may release the information, the link one day. But we, you know, I would tell people, I would say to these audiences, the thing that really excites me the most and the thing that I want people to pay attention to is that this is, you know, no other media in the history of media has had the ability to freeze the action, move the camera somewhere else, you know, or not even freeze the action, to run the same scene over and over and over, and it will play out exactly the same way, except you can move the camera wherever you want. It's as if you had, you know, the keys to the back lot, the biggest back lot in Hollywood, and and a dedicated film crew that would never leave and never got hungry, you know. And you could basically, besides that, you could alter time and space, you know. You could basically,
right,
you know, totally change the relationship of time to space. Because that's what you're doing in theater mode. You're changing the relationship of time to space, which is, I think it's groundbreaking in media in general. And I've been kind of sounding that clarion call for a couple of years now, and people think I'm insane probably, but I don't give a damn. I think it's really exciting.
Cool. Let's see. I'll limit myself to two more questions since we've hit the hour mark.
Cool.
What's been your most memorable or favorite interview that you've done with The Spartan Life?
Wow. I guess I'd have to. Well, damn, that's really hard.
Sorry for the thought-provoking one there.
Yeah, no, it is really thought-provoking. I mean, I do have favorites. I mean, you know, I mean, it's funny because all of them were really different, and I think that's what we were striving for, was really a variety of people that came into this game, this really incredible game, with us and talked to us about things often that had nothing to do with the game, you know, or gaming in general. But sometimes it did. And in those interviews, we had Marty O'Donnell, and that was groundbreaking for us. It was the beginning of a friendship. And I just really, you know, he's just an incredible guy and such a great sense of humor. So generous with his time at that. I mean, he didn't know us, and like, he just jumped on this and said, this is going to be fun. I'm going to do this. And, he gave us, you know, he gave me two full interviews, you know, and
yeah,
on two different days. Cause we would just get back together and we would talk, and he'd be like, yeah, we talk about that. You want to talk about that? Okay, cool. Let's do it. So, since then he's become a much busier man, and I rarely talk to him these days, but we're right, very grateful for the time he gave us and that. So that would definitely be up there. Bob Stein, for being the first interview we did, and for, you know, being the still one of my favorite interviews of all of the ones we did. It's the one where we basically hit upon all of the things that would become staples in the Spartan Life. The whole, you know, the joke about the guest and the host being shot dead in the middle of an interview.
Yeah.
But coming back to life and continuing the interview anyway. You know, having to deal with other gamers, in a very volatile kind of, you know, dangerous space while you're trying to talk to somebody about, you know, the book of the future, you know, it's like,
right,
what? So that was loads of fun. We learned a lot from that one. More recently, Katie Salen, I think that was just, you know, that was a really, really cool interview for me. It was the first one we did, in Halo 3, well, not true. We interviewed Frankie for the Bungie disc in Halo 3. But it was the first interview after Frankie that we did in Halo 3. And where we really started to take advantage of these really dynamic maps built in Forge. And then more recently, OK Go, which was just, you know, they talked about everything I wanted to hear about. I mean, there were so many things that we have in that interview from outtakes that we just couldn't fit into the interview.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, we talked at length about net neutrality and gamers and how important it is for gamers to have a free internet, not make the internet into something that, you know, that some big corporation thinks it should be. You know, it should be what we think it should be, and it should stay free that way. So, that was a great interview. They were really cool. They gave us loads of time. They also gave us two interviews, which was really nice. They came here, and then I talked to Damien again on Skype after that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and one of the nice things about that is I just felt like it really – everything kind of came together for that. We got the idea to do the contest for the Rube Goldberg Machine Forge map in Halo, which was a really great way to involve the gamers in the production of the show. We also got again, this was Mike Rosenthal's idea. Why don't we get a chiptune remix of one of the OK Go songs to put in the show? And yeah. He got this artist J. Arthur Keynes from Toronto to do a really incredible remix of This Too Shall Pass, which we ran. You'll see it when you see the video tomorrow during the Rube Goldberg Machine map. So that was one of my favorites. So I don't know. I mean, if I had to pick one. I don't think I could. Malcolm McLaren also was up there.
Yeah. They all were. That was a weird interview.
Yeah.
In my opinion, that was a really weird interview.
Tell me what you think is weird about it. I'll tell you what everybody else has said. Remember?
Anything well, I don't remember specifically because it was like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But, I mean, his attitude about things was just very, I'll say, unique.
Yeah. He was in. Unique guy. He died just a couple of months ago, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow.
R.I.P., yeah. He was a very, very interesting person. He actually came here to my apartment to do that. I met Malcolm because of Chip Music, actually. He came to a Chip Music show and dubbed it the new punk rock and wrote an article for Wired magazine about how Chip Music is the new punk. He called it 8-bit punk. I thought he was fascinating. There are plenty of things that people have said over the years about Malcolm and, you know, him manipulating people and this and that and all that stuff. And, you know, whatever is the truth, what I got from him was that he's a fascinating guy. He had an incredible grasp of the history of art and music and culture in general, and applied that to every project that he ever did. The guy who, you know, basically co-founded the Sex Pistols with Johnny Rotten and Sid Vicious, and it was pretty, you know, I think he's had a really interesting life, and when he died, I'm sure he thought back on all that and was pretty happy about it. That was a pretty weird one. I think the thing that people thought was really strange about it was how I faded his voice out often, and I just kind of wanted to get this feeling in the interview of, it was just this long conversation, and it didn't really matter if you didn't hear every single bit of it. Like, we'd be walking away and his voice would be fading out because the camera was staying stationary and we were walking away. And people complained about it. Like, they thought it was an accident. Like, I don't know. It was intentional. But I just thought it fit with the whole concept of the interview, which was one long take, basically. Well, it wasn't really, but that was how we originally conceived it, was to do one long take without cutting, but he made that impossible because he kept running around the map and we couldn't keep up with him, so we had to reshoot a lot of it. But it was fun.
That episode seemed more the more prominent ones, where you could definitely tell the other stand-ins definitely played a big role in making the episode what it was.
Yeah, somebody we haven't had in the show for a long time now is Warrior 3000, who was he made an appearance in the Marty O'Donnell interview. And to tell you the truth, I was angry about it because they're all told very clearly not to follow us to the top of the map because we needed to get up above the fray so we could talk. It was an early interview, so I didn't realize that, you know, it would be possible to actually coexist with gamers without them killing you.
Right.
But while we're standing up there, he starts taking shots at Marty with his plasma pistol, knowing that it wouldn't hurt him, of course. And Marty says, "Who is that?" Warrior 3000. Then he takes him out with his rocket launcher.
Yeah, that was cool.
So we let because of that. Yeah, because Warrior put up with that, we let him have a, you know, give the final kill to the Malcolm McLaren episode. We were joined by a guy named John Pavlich, who was writing for Wired magazine at the time. He wrote an article on us for Wired magazine. He wanted to be there as a reporter in the interview, which he was throughout the whole interview. And you can see him in the background in a number of shots. Uh-huh. And I think at one point I point him out just as he's being, you know, ruthlessly blown away by Warrior and his clan. You know, they're just like they cornered him in between some rocks and just like unloaded every piece of weaponry they had on him, which he thought was pretty funny, I think. But yeah. Go ahead.
That kind of improv that makes it special too, I think.
And often like things will happen where, like in Halo 2, it was harder because things would happen and we would miss them. The cameraman wouldn't be looking at it, you know, be like, oh shoot, did you see that? No, oh I did, okay. Like one of the gamers will go, you won't believe what just happened. While you were saying this happened. We're like, well, we didn't get it, so it didn't happen. You know?
Only in Halo 3, yeah.
Yeah, Halo 3, it's like if it happens anywhere on the map, you can find it and you can shoot it later. So,
right.
So, yeah, that's been a big change for us. But, yeah, it helps with the, you know, I don't know if in the Louis Wu episode, there are a lot of, since we've been using Halo 3, really, but it's particularly in Louis Wu episode, I went to great pains to find interesting things that were happening in that racing map, you know, and like investigating them while we were talking, you know, like just letting the camera rove off away from the discussion and see somebody fly off the track, slam into a wall, get back on the you know, the mongoose and start back up again.
Right.
Or, you know, Louis would take a shot with his brood shot at the wall and blow somebody off the track. And I would just switch directly to their point of view as they're flying off the track in real time.
Right.
So it's kind of cool because with saved film now, the theater mode thing, you've got one layer of unpredictability happening while you're actually interviewing the guests. And you've got another layer of unpredictability that happens when you're shooting it, when you're capturing it to video.
Mm-hmm.
After the fact, after it's already been, you know, enacted.
Right.
So, you know, all kinds of things come up that you didn't even notice. You know, like sometimes I'll watch the entire game from some random gamer's point of view just to see what he sees in the game while, you know, as it was going on during the interview.
That's and, you cool.
know, yeah, it's pretty fun because you catch all kinds of stuff that you wouldn't have caught. And I, you know, that interview had 16 people in it, I think. So, you know, it was,
wow.
I didn't have the time to watch 16, you know, sit through the whatever it was, 45-minute game 16 times, you know. But I did it like three or four times, you know, and caught things. And like anytime I got to a point where something was happening interesting, I'd freeze it and I just jump around points of view and see who was seeing the best point of view of it. And you know, of course I could just move my camera there freely, but
right.
It's kind of neat. I really like the jumping point of view feature because it doesn't just switch digitally from one to the other. It actually moves you physically from one to the other, which is kind of amazing. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, but then there's the whole fact of cycling through people.
Yeah.
Because you won't necessarily get to the one that you want.
It's true. But it's nice to start on one and move to another one that's further across the map. So the camera just literally like whips across the map really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's so fast that it's almost subliminal. Like you don't even notice it. And I've had to point this out to people who don't know anything about games. Like this is another feature of media that doesn't exist in any other media. The ability to jump from point of view to point of view,
right.
And have it, you know, not only do that at a push of a button, but to do it treating it as real space, moving from one person to another person in, you know, in the space, actually moving. And it's something that you see Hollywood directors imitating in feature films nowadays, I noticed, you know, like in chase movies and things like that. You often get, you know, somebody driving by in a car and suddenly the point of view just goes whoop out the window and it lands on this guy on the street watching the car go by, you know, like a reaction
right.
shot.
And a lot of that CGI too.
Yeah, it's totally CGI. But it's interesting that there are, I think that that comes from game culture. I think that that
right.
They're internalizing a lot of things, a lot of the innovations in game culture, and they're making it part of Hollywood now. Right. They have been for a while, of course, you know, and Lord of the Rings is a good example. There are a number of examples. But you know, that's pretty cool that that's happening.
It is really cool.
They can't do it as easy as we can, though.
Yeah, you have it all digitized.
Yep.
Okay, my last question. How did... This is kind of combined two into one. How did you get the idea for Octobit to do the 8-bit music and all the Solid Gold Elite Dancers? Because I think those are two staples of your series, is those two things right there.
John Keith and I had a number of conversations. This Spartan Life was really born out of, you know, I have a company called Bong & Dern Incorporated, which is a sound design company. John was one of my employees at the time. He was my only employee at the time, as a matter of fact. And work was kind of like tapering off a little bit for a couple of weeks. We're hanging around. I just got an Xbox for my kids to play when they came to visit me at the studio. And John and I were talking about it, and I got an Xbox Live, and I was saying, you got to check this out, man. It's just really – gaming is like this whole thing, this whole universe that you and I are too old to appreciate completely. But when you get into it, you're going to find out what I'm talking about. And John's a bit younger than me, so he jumped right on it. And we started kind of getting these ideas like, wow, you know, we should do something. Like, and I'd seen Red versus Blue. I knew some of the guys from the old clan. I'd worked with them on projects, making music for them. And I knew that I wanted to do something in Machinima because I thought it was really exciting and weird. I'd seen My Trip to Liberty City by, I can't remember the guy's name now, but he did it was a Grand Theft Auto Machinima, an early one. I think it was a one-off. I don't think he did anything after that. It's also a favorite of Bernie Burns. We talked about that a lot when I first met him. All those things had an impact on me, but I just didn't have time to take advantage of it. And I thought, you know, let's make an art piece, like this weird video art piece that happens in a game. And then when we got Xbox Live, I was like, okay, we're going to make it social. We're going to make it about people's relationships in games. We're going to go online and we're going to do some really crazy stuff that has nothing to do with gaming. And we're going to watch the gamers react to it and see what they say. So we started throwing these ideas back and forth. And I thought our audience was going to be this totally small, rarefied, you know, New York City art crowd, you know, video art crowd or something. It'd be like, yes, this is very interesting. Puff on the pipe, you know, tug on the beard.
Right.
So John was like, yeah, this is pretty cool. It's like, you know, like you can talk to these people with the headsets. And we started coming up with this idea that it was a social space and we wanted to do something that treated it like, you know, like a town square or something like that. So I don't remember how it happened, but I came up with the idea of a talk show. And I thought, what if we, you know, you can talk, so let's have a talk show. Let's meet people in the game and talk to them and just interview them. And at the time we thought, okay, we're going to find somebody who we know who's kind of professional and can be the host. I didn't even think it was going to be me at the time. I don't remember who came up with the idea of Octobit, but I know that John Keith came up with his name. I think John might have suggested, you know, if it's a talk show that you have to have a musical host, you know, you have to have like the Paul Schaefer, you know,
right.
Was the guy's name in Johnny Carson.
You got me.
God, I can't believe I've forgotten. Oh man. So sure, yeah.
No.
Yeah. But, the band leader, but yeah, we had to have a band leader basically, you know, Max Weinberg for Conan, you know, that whole, or I guess it's Conan.
Right.
Yeah, anyway. So, yeah. So John said, well, you know, maybe he's a DJ, you know, and he could be, Dr. Octobit. That was his original name for him, Dr. Octobit. And if you look at I think the original video, I introduce him as Dr. Octobit, not DJ Octobit.
Really?
And yeah, at some point I started to think, well, Dr. Octobit sounds too much like Dr. Octopus from Spider-Man. so I decided that we would, and DJ is more accurate, so we decided to call him DJ Octobit. And Octobit, it's a pun on 8-bit because he plays 8-bit
right,
music.
Right, play Octobit. Right.
So And then the dancers, I don't remember whose idea that was. I think it was probably my idea, or maybe we came up with it together. But all I can tell you is, man, that was hard in Halo 2. We were like, six people in a room synchronized. That was hard work. I got to tell you, man. After that, we found various ways to make it a little easier. But those are trade secrets that I'm still protecting. That took on a life of its own. I think people, the fans really responded that they saw Gold Elite dancers. They responded to Octobit too. As a matter of fact, I got a number of, somewhat X-rated fan emails.
Oh boy.
From young women who wanted to meet Dr. Octobit or DJ Octobit. They talked about the strong silent type, you know. He was a total turn on, apparently.
Wow. So,
Yeah. I have one particular email that would shock you if you read it. I can say that much.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's become a thing of legend amongst the crew. I can't really let it out because, to protect this woman's privacy. But
right.
Damn, I got to say. And back in the day we got this is probably the thing we should have been talking about all along, you know. all the pictures of half-dressed people that we got in our email, you know, was,
whoa, you know,
that fan mail. Yeah, so Brent, that wake Brent up. Brent, does that get a rise out of it all? I don't mean like literally. I just mean like, you know.
No, both literally and figuratively. You've achieved both, my friend.
Excellent. That's what I aim to please, and apparently they did too. It's been a very interesting experience, I got to say, and we're really glad to be continuing. And we're really glad to be here with you guys, man. This is awesome, Podtacular, for the first time in 4 years.
I know, it's been such a long time.
So we're gonna have you guys on the show at some point, definitely. We'll have you guys and cool. and Fumo.
Yeah, hopefully we can get Fumo on.
Yeah, I think the fun thing to do would be to do an interview. You know, as usual, and I have you guys come in for, you know, commentary after, and we'll like kind of hang out and talk about it and talk about what's new in Halo. And I think it'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Talk about the old days.
Oh, gosh.
The old days of
the old days. Now with his folding bike.
Yes. He was jive talking.
Yeah, there's been a lot of memes that have cropped up in the Podtacular community since Fumo's left.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One of them is his folding bike. Yeah, that's a long story.
Which he doesn't need anymore since he's running all the time, I guess, right?
Oh, actually, I've talked to him, and he says he actually runs to work sometimes. And he says it's nice enough that sometimes he doesn't even have to take a shower, and his other coworkers don't mind. I'm like, wow. What?
Wow.
Yeah, so, I know.
So he works in a massage parlor. No, I don't know. Where would you work that you could? That
no, he, mind? He works in the office building. I forget okay. What he does.
Okay, and what city is he in, or what town?
Orlando.
Oh, right. I guess I knew that. Cool.
Orlando, cool. Florida.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I should jump off. Is there anything you want me to do before I go?
No. I think that covers most of my stuff.
So we'll do a goodbye or something, or
yeah, we'll sign off, I guess. Brent, do you have anything to say since you've been quiet this whole time?
Oh no, I've just been listening. See, I've noticed that the show is significantly better when I shut up
and let the
guests talk. Now, during a normal show, yeah. You know, I provide comic relief.
He provides the comic stuff when we actually have submissions to rat on.
Yeah, probably most of your guests don't talk a blue streak like I do, so, you know.
We get a good number that do.
Do you?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of one of the things we're trying to do during kind of the dead space between Halo 3 and Halo Reach is try to get some of the big names. Like, we've had Keith on, we have you on, we have Bernie on, we had BS Angel on, we had CM Near on last week or 2 weeks
nice.
Ago.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get some of those names in here.
Audie McBloggy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, cool. next week we're interviewing Insane from Forge Hub. So that'll be
fantastic. Yeah, those guys are good.
Yeah, so we're definitely trying to get our name back out there.
Cool.
Hopefully when Halo Reach comes around, we can enjoy the splendor of what was Podtacular during the Halo 2 days. But
yeah,
those are very big shoes to fill for us.
Well, you're doing an excellent job, man.
Yeah, we're trying, that's for sure. Well, thanks, guys, for listening in to this very special episode with Damien Lacedaemon from The Spartan Life. And tell us again where you're from and what's going on with Waypoint tomorrow.
Well, we're tomorrow, July 10th, we have the premiere edition of our new series with Halo Waypoint. And our guest is the band OK Go, whose videos have been like blasting all over the internet and taking down servers from the hits that they're receiving on the internet. And it's the beginning of a series for us, and we're really excited about the guests we got coming up. So stay tuned. thespartanlife.com for information, and Halo Waypoint is the place to see the actual episodes.
Very nice.
Thank you so much for having me, man. I had a great time.
Thank you for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
And to our listeners, we will see you next week.
Rock. We'll be right back.